Hello and welcome to a special episode of the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by Graeme McGarry and Scott Mullen to go over all the weird and wonderful things happening in the world just now. Guys, strange, surreal times. Thank you very much for spending some time with me today to record this podcast. Well, first of all, I suppose this is just a nice wee escape from the madness that is currently going on. Guys, I very much hope that you and yours are safe. I hope that everyone tuned into this podcast today is also the same. It goes without saying that it's a lot easier to get by if we take care of each other, so hopefully everyone's doing that. And for the next half an hour or so, we'll maybe just go over some of the more light-hearted things going on and focus a bit on Motherwell for the first time in quite some time for myself personally. Guys, the obvious place to start is, how are we coping without the football?
From a work perspective, at least there's still some live issues at the moment, but the sort of 2-3 months or whatever it's going to be that's stretching out before us without football, it's going to be a huge challenge. But you know, just personally as well, because obviously you love football and it's what fills our days, and it gives us so much. And perhaps it's only in times like this you sort of realise that maybe you have been taking it for granted. And I'm not be moaning about getting up for a midweek game at McDermott Park. Well, probably will be actually, but probably will be. But I give a lot for that opportunity now, you know. So, but yeah, bearing up at the moment.
And yourself, Scott?
Yeah, probably much the same as Graeme. I mean, I'm in a slightly different situation at the BBC, that we are fortunate that we don't have a certain amount of pages to fill, but we do have a certain amount of airtime and website space to try and allocate to sport. But yeah, Graeme is right. It's a troubling period for everybody just now, and I must admit, you know, I do think of people at football clubs just now that we deal with, and Graeme will be the same, deal with on a daily basis and a weekly basis, who are facing quite an uncertain time at the moment, and it's just horrible to see. For what it's worth, I think the end in sight probably isn't going to be there for a good wee while at the moment, and I know that the SFA and SPFL are currently looking at task forces and this kind of stuff to try and find out where we go from here. It's just, I think the one thing we can all agree on that is that nobody will agree on everything, if that makes sense, over the next couple of weeks and couple of months. We've seen various potential solutions bandied about, and it does seem quite difficult, if not impossible, for everybody to get a consensus and fall under the same page, which means that while there is no football to be talking about, that's never stopped Scottish football in the past, and it probably won't stop it over the next 2-3 months until everything hopefully gets back onto its feet sooner rather than later.
Graeme, we've had many instances of silly season in Scottish football, but this could really become the silliest of silly seasons in the coming weeks and months, I suspect. It's hard to speculate, but will we finish the season? We're still only being delayed by a week, I suppose, so it's hard to kind of tell, 6 days removed from our game against Aberdeen being cancelled, but there's so little clarity. The Euros have been held back a year, so it looks like we will have extra time over the summer, but that leads to contractual issues, to broadcast issues, just a number of headaches. Even just thinking about logistics such as players who will have undoubtedly booked their end of season breaks and everything else, everything is completely up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's an unprecedented situation, and as far as you say there, Andy, you know, there's so many factors that you have to consider, and it's such a mess going forward that, as Scott said there, there's not going to be an easy way out of this at all. I think in terms of the season itself, it may seem like a facile sort of thing issue at the moment, but I think they have to finish the season. I think at some point the priority will have to be finishing this season, no matter how long that might take. Now, I think people might have to get their heads around the idea that football as we know it just isn't going to be that way for the foreseeable future. I think possibly next season will be much shorter, it could be a truncated season. I think that's probably the best way ahead out of this, but as you say, there's all sorts of other issues to consider there, because players are out of contract, they've got loan players whose deals will be up. You know, what do you do? Do you allow Hearts, perhaps at the bottom of the league, to strengthen in the next transfer window? Is that fair to then play the last eight fixtures with them having an extra chance to strengthen their squad when the likes of Hearts and Mirren and Hamilton probably won't be able to do that to the same extent? So, I don't know, David, to be honest with you, Andy, I'm like everybody else at the moment. We're sort of fumbling around in the dark and trying to find out what's going to happen. I think, in fairness to the SPFL and the SFA, I mean, I'll be the first to kind of pull them up when they're dawdling and they're not making decisive decisions, but I think everyone's just trying their best at the moment to work together and try and find a way out of all of this. I think the deadline of June the 30th is set down by UEFA. I spoke to a sort of expert in sports business yesterday. He said that's wildly unrealistic. He speaks to people in China all the time, and their season was supposed to start last month. It hasn't as yet, and people over there have been isolated for 7 weeks. So I think that in Europe as a whole, and then probably in the UK more so, there's a wee bit of naivety about the severity of what's to come and the disruption it's going to cause. And, you know, football, unfortunately, will be way down the list of priorities. And I think the sort of impasse will last a lot longer than perhaps people are making out at the moment. And then obviously that's going to open up a huge can of worms in terms of contracts and things down the lane as well.
I mean, there's other things, Graham, you're right, that I think earlier on this week there was a lot of people, not necessarily people in know, but I think a lot of football fans that were probably looking at the meeting with UEFA the other day and thought this was going to provide some sort of silver bullet, that once that was shot and that was fired, that it would provide a solution, that everybody else would fall into line, and clubs could then hang their hats on, well, UEFA have said this, so let's do this. It doesn't surprise me that we're now a couple of days on, and to be honest, we're still no further forward. I think we can. The fact that the Euros are delayed, I think you can take that as read that you're then not going to get to see any domestic football before then. I would imagine you're probably talking at least August, September. There's Graham's right. He's talked about the practicalities of there are players on loan, players' contracts are finishing at the end of May. So I mean, off the top of my head, talking about Motherwell, you've got Mark Gillespie whose contract is up at the end of the season. If Motherwell wanted him to stay on, there would need to be an extension signed for that. There's obviously loan players, you know, and you have the people like Tony Watt on a short-term contract as well. There'll be loan players going back. So you need to consider that. But there's also this other thing of, it's all very well and good saying, we'll finish the season in August and September. Players are going to have to basically go through a pre-season. So you're going to have a 4 or 5 week run-up to the season starting again before it finishes. So if players aren't allowed to train with one another until July, early August potentially, at what point do you actually get round to playing competitive football? It's not fair for the quarantine to stop and then the following Saturday Motherwell are going to Ibrox or hosting St Johnstone at Fir Park. That can't happen. I think Graham is right. I think it's very likely you'll probably see next season. In my opinion, it would be the best thing to do as a shortened season down. Say, for example, you do promote two teams to the top flight, which I'm not entirely sure they will go for that, but say, hypothetically, they do. That means you've got 14 teams. If you play each other twice, that's 28. You then the league then splits in two, and then everybody plays another six games. That's probably, for me, that's probably enough.
You wouldn't play each other. You wouldn't play yourself once, though, so it would only be 26, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sorry, beg your pardon, yeah, that's right.
See, as we talk about that, the English game has now been suspended until the 30th of April, so look, what you are saying certainly rings true in the sense that it appears to be the case that we now should be of the opinion that in the short term there is going to be no football. So you're talking, what, the 13th of March was meant to be our last game. That's as long as the summer break.
Yeah, and you've also, talking about Motherwell at the moment, it seems pertinent to do so, that because the Aberdeen game was cancelled the other week, Motherwell are currently sitting third in the table. So if the season was to stop just now and titles would be handed out, teams would be relegated or not, Motherwell are currently in line to get a Europa League spot. Now, this is another thing the SPFL are going to have to take into consideration as to when the league restarts, because there, as we've seen over the God knows how many years, Scottish teams need to go through about 75 qualifiers each to get into a European competition. So if Motherwell were to finish third and get a Europa League place, at what point does that take place, and does that start after? You know, you could have Europa League qualifiers taking place before the season finishes, potentially. It's just such a mess.
I think that's a real problem for Scottish clubs and probably British clubs in general, is that when the plan by UEFA was laid out, it seems to have been based upon when the coronavirus is going to peak in mainland Europe. In Italy, although they've had an awful time of it. Serie A have said their preference is to play the games in June, because by that time they expect the peak will have passed in Italy. Here it's not supposed to peak until the middle of June. If it's peaking later here, obviously the chances of getting players in contact with each other, getting back to a normal routine, getting training again and getting games up and running, is obviously going to be further down the line for British clubs. So what Scott says is right. If the qualifiers for European competition take place at the traditional time, sort of early July, I mean, we're going about Scottish clubs not being ready for them in normal times, but they're going to be absolutely unprepared for them on this occasion. So, there may be a temptation from a Motherwell perspective to say, just call the season now, we'll take third place and we'll take the Europa League spot. I mean, it's probably not going to be possible to play in those games. Are you going to be able to travel away from home? Is anybody going to be able to travel here? Who knows? And it's just such a shame that I think that a fantastic season, no matter who finishes, in the European spots, won't be rewarded potentially this year. But again, it's probably the least of our worries at this moment in time.
Yeah, and I know I'm kind of trying to avoid overplaying the importance of football, given the substantial fears that everyone has at this moment in time, but the financial ramifications are also significant. You've already had the news of Hearts offering pay cuts to staff and players. There's contingency plans being put in place by the authorities to try and get the clubs through this. But it can't be understated, Graham, the significance of revenue through gate receipts to a football club of our size. You've got a lot of staff behind the scenes. You've got players approaching the end of the deals that were maybe at the tipping point. It's all very significant.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that probably most of the clubs in Scotland over the course of this period are going to be facing, real critical points in the future. I don't think I'm overstating this. I don't think all of them will make it to the other side of this. When you look at, there's very laudable actions taking place down south where, some players are foregoing wages to ensure that staff get paid. Unfortunately, Motherwell's players aren't in that position, What they get paid is probably more than your average Joe, but it's not enough to bail out other employees. There's obviously the issue of short-term cash flow, which has been addressed by the SPFL and the SFA have brought forward club academy and club licensing payments. But it's really just kicking the can in the road, because clubs will then have been reliant on that money later in the year, which they now won't get. So yes, it's solving a short-term problem, but further down the line we're going to have that same issue again, because there's going to be a £1.5 million hole in the normal budgeting for our clubs later on. So I'm not having a go at the joint response group for that, because I think they've got to do whatever they can in short term. But trying to alleviate that short term pain might cause long term pain over the piece that we get. In terms of, we've seen Partick Thistle today have opened up a GoFundMe page for supporters to chip into if they can. Maybe that's something that Motherwell could look into as well, just to try and, help meet those short-term payments. But obviously Motherwell supporters will say, perhaps, we pay ticket money, we pay Well Society money, you can't get blood from a stone. So, yeah, there's no doubt at all that there's a real tricky period ahead, and, I just hope that all the clubs can get through it, but my real fear is that quite a few may not.
I mean, Graham is right in what you're saying. I mean, in terms of Motherwell and a lot of other clubs, for Motherwell's attendances, I think I've the vast majority are season ticket holders that turn up. I think they probably only get a couple hundred, 200-300 above that that aren't season ticket holders. So on that basis, people coming through the gate doesn't make that much of a difference. Where they will be struggling is match day sponsorship, ball sponsorship, hospitality, corporate, that kind of thing will be hitting them hard rather than people coming through the door.
There is a way support as well, Scott, though, because we have to play games and things like that,
that's right. But I mean, just looking at the figures, I mean, there's been 1.5 million made available by the Scottish Football Authorities to Scottish clubs. When you look down south, the English Football League has released 50 million. The National League have also said that they need 20 million of government help. It just shows you that, I appreciate Scottish football clubs run on a smaller budget, but it just shows you that that 1.5 million has to go a long, long way to try and keep these clubs going. I mean, I spoke to Henry McLeish, the former First Minister, earlier on this week, who obviously did a study into the game and knows it quite well. He is fearing the worst for a lot of clubs. His own club, East Fife, is being one of them as well, that may well struggle. And he's urged the government to get involved now. It sounds, I think football can get swallowed up by its own self-importance at times, and I think in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about schools closing on Friday and hospitals and emergency services, yes, football is way down the list. However, it is a cornerstone of Scottish society, and I think the government, where possible, at some level, whether it's putting money in or devoting some sort of task force, needs to get involved with Scottish football, and not just Scottish football, to be fair, but Scottish sport, and realise that they have a role to play, because sport has a role to play in Scotland. And over the next few weeks, and in the coming months, I know Graham's little boy, and the same as mine, are both involved in the Community Trust, play for the Community Trust football teams. They're off, they're not working, they're not coaching, they're not training, they're not playing. And that is the same for clubs up and down the country. And I think there needs to be a wider recognition that, yes, football fans on a Saturday won't get to go and watch their teams, but socially, culturally, and obviously economically, this stretches much, much further than that. And that needs to be looked at on various levels by both footballing people, members of the public, and the government as well.
We'll try and move things along and talk about the season to this point. And in terms of the season as a whole, I would say it's been very positive. 2020, certainly not as much as the first half of the season. But Scott, I think given the fact we are recording, we're currently sitting third in the table, can be very satisfied with the sum of our parts. And I suppose as well that prior to this kind of unexpected halt to the season, there was a great victory against Ross County, coming from a goal behind to win the game 4-1. There was a reasonably solid showing at Tynecastle on the back of that as well. Maybe backs against the wall in the second half, but could have went on to still snatch all 3 points. It has been an up and down season, but there has been more ups and downs for me, certainly.
Absolutely. And for me right now, the most positive thing is that from a Motherwell point of view, is that after the rocky spell that they went through, kind of through February and the start of March, before getting to the Ross County and Hearts games, is that Motherwell are still third. Because there was a point, and I don't know if Graham's the same, but there was a point in the middle of that run where Motherwell just couldn't buy a victory, that you started to worry for them, that, you know, losing James Scott in the break, losing Devante Cole, not really bringing in a like-for-like replacement, or being able to bring in a like-for-like replacement, that you just thought that they might start to struggle now, and that teams have maybe sussed out how to play against them, and, you know, put pressure on the wide men, stop the service, stop them getting high up the pitch and force them back and just break Motherwell down. You know, you started to worry, but the victory over Ross County was a real... for me, it was a real turning point. And obviously, despite where Hearts are in the league, to go to Tynecastle and get a point, I think Motherwell would have taken that beforehand. The fact that they're still third, and that is with Aberdeen, with an upturn in form as well, just shows you the work that Stephen Robinson has done, particularly before the window, but also after it, to try and galvanise the team. And yeah, it might not be great timing that the football stopped. However, if you look at guys like David Turnbull, who were just starting to come back, weren't anywhere near full fitness, but now maybe have a little bit more time to try and get himself sorted out. And it also means whenever the football is coming back, everybody's in a level playing field. Whereas we saw that David's come back and played a couple of substitute games and still looked a fair bit off his peak, he will now be coming back at the same level as everybody else. And by the time the football resumes, you may get to see David Turnbull and some of the other guys that have been struggling over the last couple of months have a real crack at finishing the season strongly, if indeed the season finishes. But it's been a terrific season from a Motherwell fans' point of view, without obviously minus the blip kind of post January. But it would be a shame that if after all this, if Motherwell were to finish third, that a European place wouldn't be coming at the end of it. But as we say, it's a long way to go, but I'm still relatively confident they've got enough in their tank when and if the football gets back again that they could finish in third place.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Scott, that you've got to look at the season as a whole as being, you know, unbelievably successful for Motherwell. Excuse me. You look at the past few seasons, I think it's, what, 4 or 5 years since we finished in the top six. And the point Scott makes about David Turnbull, take any other team in the division and take the objectively what is their best player out of it, whether it's Hearts with Stephen Naismith or Rangers with Alfredo Morelos, Celtic odds on Edward, you would see a huge drop-off in terms of the points they gained and, you know, their position in the league table, in my opinion. Maybe not Celtic as much, but David Turnbull was out of the team for the whole entire season, but yet Stephen Robinson's found a way to compensate for that. I think Liam Polworth is probably a vastly underrated signing in many quarters. I think he's been great, and he's sort of filled that creative void a little, which obviously the absence of David Turnbull left. So I think the management team, the players, they all deserve huge credit. And sadly, I mean, if the season is to finish now, at least they can look back on it with a great degree of pride, because I think they've done the supporters proud, they've done the club proud, and I think they can be very proud of everything they've achieved so far.
And if we were to look at the low points, I guess the obvious place to focus on would be that triple header against St Mirren, which was bleak enough just on paper, to be fair, but they
acknowledge with such enthusiasm, Graham.
Actually, I went to the away game for that. I took the wee man and the train from Glasgow Central to Paisley. The only carriage we could go on was with the Well Boys, and I've got to say, I mean, he's only 8 years old, but he had the time of his life. So fair play to the boys for that. What a laugh it was. The game was completely grim, though. You know, a gale force wind and pouring the rain, but it was worth it for that wee 20-minute train journey. It was great stuff.
I spent my whole afternoon in the St Mirren end as well, which the polite applause that I had to muster when they scored their equaliser had all the enthusiasm of how I described these three games. But that is disappointing in terms of to drop out the cup at a stage where we'd seen the draw as well. We knew Aberdeen at home in a quarter final. It looked quite tasty. It looked like a winnable tie, and you never know what could have happened from there. We still don't know what would have happened from there, to be fair, if we had got through the quarter final. But I think what you guys are saying about the season is there has been a wee bit of negativity and wee kind of murmurings, which surprised me somewhat. We were in a slump. We were struggling to turn a corner and find that all-important 3 points. But the manager seems a very level character, Scott. Someone that doesn't get too carried away with victories. And he's the same in defeat. In fact, I think he's kind of softened his view in defeat somewhat in recent times as well. There was maybe a spell where he would single players out, or he would make points maybe in the heat of the moment too soon after the game. It seems to have very much mellowed his reaction to matches as well.
He has these moments. He still has these moments. I can't remember what game it was, but I remember there was a defeat at Fir Park in the middle of February where he was quite stark in what he was saying in terms of the team. There's players that he continually trusts or trusted who haven't backed it up or maybe let him down, and he needed to try and change things. But overall, I mean, Stephen he's done a tremendous job over his entire period at Motherwell. I think, you know, two cup finals in that season a couple of years ago, and the way the second half of the season finished last year and bounced into this year, as Graham said, for the team to respond to losing their best player and arguably the best player Motherwell has produced for a generation, and not to seem fazed by it was quite something. And you know, up until that St Mirren game in the cup where they get knocked out, I don't think it would have been unreasonable to be talking about Stephen Robinson as a contender for manager of the year at that point. You know, you've got a team with Motherwell on a shoestring budget, with only maybe one or two clubs paying less. Your team's in third. You could have been in a quarter final at that point. You know, he would have been a serious contender for manager of the year in my eyes. And I know there's a few others in the industry as well, among the football writers who would have thought the same. Now, that's not to say that there's not great credit to be given, because there is. It's just, Graham's right. You look back on the St Mirren Cup games, and I'll be honest, the one in Paisley for me is one of the most infuriating and frustrating ones, because I thought Motherwell could have come away. I was the same. I took my wee boy through to that, and I thought that game was there for the taking. I know that St Mirren had their chances, but you think of the Mark O'Hara chance right in the second half, with about 15 minutes to go, where he just dragged it wide. I thought Motherwell really should have put the game to bed, and as much as a lot of the players, I spoke to a couple of the players that were happy to get the game back to Fir Park, I was concerned that the game wasn't put to bed at St Mirren. And as I say, I think that was at the stage where teams had maybe sussed out how to play against Motherwell, and I worried that playing the same team again so soon after, we would see that they'd maybe sussed them out, and we saw that in the first half of Fir Park in the replay. All credit to manage to pull it back, but that was a frustrating thing. But going out of the cup could have spelled Motherwell into complete turmoil. But again, credit to the manager and credit to the players that since then, and obviously they lost the league to them a week later, but since it's not a great result round against Ross County, and they've gone to Tynecastle and managed to get a point. So undoubtedly that I think that's those two St Mirren Cup games were the low point of the season. But as you said, Andy, there's plenty more highs than lows what we've seen this season.
Just the subject of the manager, when you were saying there, I mean, I think you're right. One of the biggest sort of mantras you get from going to the weekly press conference is that, you know, he always does say, don't get too up when you win, don't get too down when you get beat. But as Scott mentioned there, he does have this knack of selectively filleting players when he thinks it's required. I think Kasper Sloth would probably, you probably hold his hands up to that. Exactly. It didn't quite work with him, you know, but there is other players that he's mentioned in passing. You know, I remember Chris Long getting sent off at Ackies. He didn't miss him that day, certainly. And obviously, Sherwin Seedorf, even we spoke to him about him recently, and he said, you know, he has to do more, and even through things that he has to do. So he's not averse to, you know, making comment on players publicly when he thinks it will help. But certainly, maybe the hothead part of his personality, which we saw early on in his time at Motherwell as manager, perhaps understandable when you're Zach Jules running about in defence. You don't really see that these days, you know. So I think, not with a point to, you know, sound if I'm sucking up to Stephen Robinson, but I think he's done a fantastic job, and it does, you know, puzzle me slightly when I do hear quite a bit of negativity towards him at times, because, you know, there's Motherwell fans probably don't want to hear it, but they don't really have any right to be up in third place in the table. And I think if the manager's getting them there on the budget that he has, then he's got to be doing something right.
Can I just add in quickly that it popped into my head to talk about the St Mirren Cup games. The replay at Fir Park has given me the highlight of my season, which was watching Christy Manzinga's quadruple clearance attempt while looking as if it was a bowler's treat. It was an absolute sight to behold. My heart was in my mouth, but fair play to him.
My dad actually mentioned that I was away with Celtic at the time, and I was watching it on Bet365 with the updates. So I was watching the penalty shoot next to Bob Griever, the son, who's a big St Mirren fan. He's neutral, I meant to say. Watching Bet365 updates, so that was an experience and a half.
It was absolutely heartbreaking, to be fair. that's everything that sums up being a Motherwell supporter. But what you were saying about the manager, I think, is quite indicative of a manager that is is making his journey in the game as well. He's obviously a much more experienced manager than he was when he arrived at the club after taking over from Mark McGee, and that kind of shows his progression as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think what he's managed to do with the players is he makes them think very short term, and gets them focusing on blocks of games. So he doesn't look at the fact that we're top on the table. I know it's a bit of a cliche to say this, but he genuinely looks at the 3 or 4 games at a time, and he'll set realistic targets. And you know, you can't say that the players aren't responding to him, you know, because he's getting so much out of players that, you know, people elsewhere maybe have discarded. You look at like Jake Carroll, I think, before his injury there, which was unfortunate. Been a fantastic signing. Now, you speak to anyone else from clubs he's been at before, you saw, you know, fans of previous clubs coming on when he signed and saying, why have you signed this guy? He's rubbish, he's rotten. But I don't know, people talk about it. Motherwell seems to be a place where, you know, players can come who've maybe lost their way and get back on track. The obvious candidate for that at the moment is Tony Watt, obviously. And I think Stephen Robinson is the ideal man to get the best out of Tony Watt, because he knows when to give him the encouraging word, when to give him a kick up the backside. And I think that's something Tony Watt maybe does need. He would probably admit it himself now and again. So, yeah, I don't really see... My heart was really in my mouth when Hearts and Hibs were both in the market for managers over the winter period. Because I don't really see it. I know it's difficult to say because Motherwell probably have a contingency plan in place, but I don't see anyone out there who could do a better job than Stephen Robinson. And I'm very glad that Hearts and Hibs looked the other way for Daniel Stendel and Jack Ross. So I don't think Callum Burrows could believe that either, to be honest with you, but I think he's very relieved.
Yeah, and just talking about someone else that extended their stay, you waxed lyrical about David Turnbull. The fact that he put pen to paper in a new deal now, that, as much as anything else, it's a financial boost for the club, and the fact that David now has that extra year, he can continue his development. He was obviously making such rapid progress through the ranks in what was the most fantastic breakthrough season. His career has stalled through no fault of his own. We very much hope he can get back up to his best. And if he does, then he's going to net the football club a major amount of money. So to show that loyalty to the football club, who I suppose have done the same with him through his injury, and that was all captured in that fantastic documentary the other week. But in terms of That came as a massive boost. It's a shame, obviously, that circumstances mean that we can't view David's comeback on the pitch just now, but a huge lift, and you could tell how much it meant to David and everyone associated with the football club.
It
was one of the longest questions of all time as well. What was the question? I don't know.
A long pause. Graham will back this up as well. You don't get a lot from David. Anytime you speak to him, he's always quite quiet, and I think that's just the way he is, and I think that's the way he is around the club. And any of the fans that saw the documentary will have seen that as well. You know, he's a quiet local lad who just wants to play football and wants to play football for Motherwell. That will obviously change, and it nearly did change last year, if it wasn't for the kind of tragic circumstances with him having to go for his op. But he's shown tremendous resilience and courage to come back from that, particularly at a young age. And I think people forget that it's easy to just, you know, say he's a footballer, he's earning a fortune. I mean, David, for a 19-year-old lad a year ago, was earning a decent wage, but you know, it wasn't life-changing money by any stretch of the imagination, but he had the opportunity to go to Celtic and get that. And for a boy who lives at home with his parents, you know, and for a Lanarkshire lad to have that then suddenly taken away from you, regardless of who your football team is, you know, that's an incredibly difficult thing for somebody of that age to deal with, particularly with the sharp trajectory that he'd had to get to that point. You know, it's not as if he'd been it's not as if he was like Stevie Hamill or Laz, who had been playing in the first team for years and years and years, and then their opportunity came. David came from complete obscurity to being a 3.25 million Celtic player with a bright Scotland future ahead of him in the eyes of many within the space of about 6 months. And to have that kind of cruelly taken away, I think he's done astonishingly well to show the not just the physical strength but the mental strength to cope with that and the maturity to cope with that. And we've already spoke earlier on that it's tremendous that he's signed his new deal from a Motherwell perspective, because it effectively, well, until the coronavirus happened, it effectively bought Motherwell back the year that they'd lost with him. The club wouldn't have said this publicly, but in the back of the minds of some, I'm sure the thought would be if we get him game time now, by the end of the season, he might be looking as if he's getting close to where he was last year, and the offers may kind of come in again. Because after all, as we're seeing just now, there's not a lot of money swirling about, and while Motherwell fans probably wish they could see David Turnbull get a testimonial at Fir Park, the club will want to act and do what's best for them, and that will definitely be selling David Turnbull for a high profit whenever they think they're ready to. So, as we've already said, hopefully, if there's a silver lining to what's happened, is that it gives David a chance to fully recuperate and get on a level playing field with the rest of the team, and try and get some sort of a mid-season or pre-season under his belt to get going, so he can start showing everybody again what a tremendous talent he actually is.
I've got to say, I mean, fair play to him, because I'm as big a Motherwell fan as the next guy, but I'm not sure I'd have signed a deal in that situation. It's maybe just because you're conditioned so much to the sort of cutthroat nature of football. You know, clubs dispense with players all the time, players use clubs all the time, stepping stones, and it's so refreshing and so, it probably was, you know, a bit of a neck breaker when I heard it. You know, I was like, what, is he signed a new deal? I really did not expect it. So hats off to him. You know, he's rewarded the club for them sticking by him at a really low point in his career and doing everything they can to get him back to his best. And the club have been rewarded for that. And it's really nice to hear that, because often, you know, you hear all the stories about players being discarded when they've got serious injuries. Now, obviously, he's a major asset to Motherwell as well. Let's not kid ourselves. But at the same time, it's fantastic to see the boy putting, you know, the club, maybe not first, but certainly uppermost in his thoughts when it came to signing this deal, because, you know, he could wait it out, he could be sold for a lower amount in this summer, or, you know, even leave for nothing the next summer if he hadn't signed the deal, and probably earned himself a lot more money in the process in terms of signing on fees and things like that. So, yeah, fantastic piece of news for the club, and, you know, fair play to David for doing that as well.
Just want to kind of echo what you're saying there, Graham. I'm a little bit weird. I was surprised whenever I get called to say that he was going to be signing. That you know as well as I do, this has been the contract negotiations with David have been going on for months. Or say negotiations, the talks with him, this has been on the table for a while. And a bit like you, maybe being cynical, I was starting to think if he was going to sign it, he'd have done it by now. And that's not a criticism of the boy to David at all. You could, as you say, you could completely understand if he didn't, because it may have opened up an easier route for clubs to or bigger clubs to think, you know what, let's take a gamble on him. But it shows great maturity and a good I don't know what was I looking for, just a good attitude to be grateful for what the club have done and put him through in terms of his rehab and just sticking by him. And as you say, it's refreshing to see, especially in this day and age, something like that happening again.
Guys, just before we finish up, there's all sorts of lists and everything else going on just now as we try to find ways to pass our time. What I'm going to do is put you both on the spot. One obscure Motherwell game that we can find on YouTube that we should certainly be sitting down to watch and pass maybe 10 minutes of our quarantine.
I'll go one that immediately jumps to mind, just because I did see it quite recently. It's maybe not that obscure, but there was the Tommy Coyne hat trick down at Rugby Park.
That was your Twitter feed that I saw on, perhaps, I don't know, but
that was just, I mean, I was at that game, and I remember over and above Tommy Coyne's hat-trick was just an unbelievably inept refereeing performance as well from, I think it was Waddle, that was in the middle that day, and it was just the goal where he latches onto they throw in and dinks it over. It'll be Lekovic, would it have been? Lekovic in goals.
Is he that Colin Meldrum?
Colin Meldrum?
Was it Meldrum, was it? Oh, even better. So, I've not forgiven him for that one that went through his legs from John Sutton, who was at Mirren that day. But, no, it's just a great game and just great memories as well. And a truly honking Motherwell strip to go along with. So, yeah, it's got all the pieces. I'd recommend that one. I think it's quite extended highlights as well, about 5-6 minutes maybe. So, yeah, that's definitely one you can pass a bit of time with.
Pretty sure we've got a John Philbin indirect free kick goal as well in that game. I don't like that.
I think it was, aye. I think you're right.
Actually,
an assist from Andy Roddy as well, I think, if I remember correctly.
So the text every single box. Right, Scott, you're stuck now.
What the one I'll go back to is, I'm trying to remember what the kind of, probably kind of late 90s. If you remember Motherwell and Hearts, it was the middle of the John Boyle era. Motherwell and Hearts were kind of going for third, and it went down the last game of the season where Motherwell needed to beat Rangers and hope that Hearts lost to Sunday. And I remember going to Fir Park that day with my mum, and it was bouncing. At that age, I must have been kind of 11, 12 years old, I can't remember it, ever seen Fir Park as busy as that. And from memory, we won 2-0. On the last game, I think Kevin Twaddle got at least one of them.
Twaddle scored, definitely. I remember
George
that.
Spencer might have got the other one. And then news came through that Hearts had won, which meant we hadn't got third place, which is the kind of typical Motherwell way of doing things. Make life hard for yourself. Think you've managed to get away with it, then realise no, you've not. But I remember, I think Twaddle scored a brilliant goal. I think both goals came in the second half. I remember him just kind of rampaging down and putting the ball in the net. But if you've managed to find the footage of that game, I remember that Fir Park was absolutely heaving. It was absolutely bouncing. And that was probably at that age the first time I'd ever seen it that busy. Until the only other time I can think of running but then was the Mitchell van der Gag free kick against the Fermelin the last day of the season. I remember being the front row of the East Stand with that and running on the pitch and probably should have got arrested. So no, go for one of those two games. Either the game against Inferno at the end of the season, or the Kevin Twaddle masterclass against Rangers again the last game of the season.
Just another one that popped into my mind there when Scott was talking was I'm pretty sure there's decent highlights of the game where Stevie Kirk went in goals and saved a penalty at Tynecastle. Just when you mentioned Hearts, I think it was a 2-2 draw. A bit before your guys' time, maybe 1988. I think it was.
Yeah, it was definitely.
Look it up. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, and there's a crack in the interview, I think, after it as well with him, where he talks about Gringos and all that sort of thing. So, definitely want to look up. I think that was my first ever Motherwell strip as well. The one match winner job with the badge in the middle and the claret shoulder.
Show your age now, son.
Show my age now.
Well, guys, that's certainly some food for thought and some time passing activities there. Thank you very much for spending the last 45 minutes in my company. I've very much enjoyed it.
Not all.
Thank you, mate.
You've been listening to the SC podcast. I've got absolutely no idea when we'll be back. Thank you for joining us. Take care. Bye-bye.